Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 652, titled Palin by Comparison. This program is being recorded on November 8th of the year 2008. Well, this past week, of course, was Election Day, and Barack Obama became President of the United States, the first African-American president, and I'm going to be exploring a number of different issues vis-a-vis the election race itself, the candidates, and what we can reasonably expect. I'm going to be spending a lot of time analyzing aspects of Obama's background, and so there's an awful lot in the can. I can't stress for listeners, there's an awful lot in the wings, I should say, soon to be in the can. I can't stress to listeners strongly enough, spitfirelist.com. That's the website with links to other websites, including the websites run by WFMU at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. That has all of the For the Record shows available on streaming real audio and many of them on MP3. Very soon, going to have some wonderful announcements as far as the availability of material online. Very soon, just about everything I've done is going to be available online. But spitfirelist.com is the website that will get you up to date from a printed slash academic site. We've got a whole new website, much more professional, much more listener-friendly. New site, same fight, as we say. So please check out the Spitfire List website. Now, the first of the post-election programs that I'm going to be doing is going to be focusing not on Barack Obama or the winning party, but rather on the vice presidential candidate on the Republican side, because in Sarah Palin's background, really in Sarah Palin's foreground, there are some very sinister forces that we are to be readily seen if we take the time to look at them. And beyond that, there are a number of very, very interesting connections between the Sarah Palin milieu. I wonder if she knows what that word means. And the secessionist slash UNPO slash we got to support the minorities' rights against the big bad majorities, which sounds great until you realize that the UNPO and related organizations are fascist organizations that are championing the rights of smaller groups of people in order to break up rival states for the purposes of advancing the causes of various types of imperialism, including domination by what I call the underground Reich. Now, my guess is that there are X number of listeners out there who have been kind of wondering, you know, what has Dave been eating, drinking, smoking, breathing? When I talk about organizations like the UNPO and their championing of the rights of groups, including the groups such as the Lakota and Hawaiians here in the United States, whose native secessionist rights, to coin a term, would precipitate, at least to a certain extent, the breakup of the United States proper. I think that in the event of a total economic collapse and perhaps a political catastrophe such as a terrorist incident using weapons of mass destruction, I think the breakup of the United States is a very real possibility. I think that the underground Reich and beyond that, I think very powerful forces of darkness stretching all the way back to the pre-Enlightenment period intend for the breakup of the United States because they intend to bring about not just world fascism or even primarily world fascism, but the end of the Enlightenment itself. A couple of days ago, I was talking with some station staff members here at KFJC, where I record this program in Northern California, and one of the station management members asked me if I thought this was the most important election of all time, meaning the one that happened this past week. I wouldn't give the elections ranking. Certainly it was an important one, but I don't think that it was any more or less important than the ones that went before or the ones that are going to come after. The real point is that things are as they are because that's the way people make them or the way they fail to make them. And what I mentioned to this person, I brought that up, and I said to them that as near as I can tell, to make a very, very long story very, very short, what is intended and what against that against which Dave Emery fights is the plan to basically break the human spirit. The human spirit is to be utterly shattered and then subdued for the duration. And I believe that the breakup of the United States, the deep sixing of the country that began the anti-imperial revolutionary trend, so to speak, with the American Revolution, breaking up a country that really was a product of the Enlightenment and for all of America's enormous shortcomings. In many ways, this country did serve as a beacon to much of the rest of the world. And believe me, I think there are some very dark forces that want to see to it that that beacon becomes a lesson to future generations that they should never, ever try to achieve enlightenment or democracy or egalitarian government. Liberté, égalité et fraternité. Liberty, equality, and fraternity, as the French revolutionary slogan had it, because it ends in what the U.S. ended in, which was ruin and bloodshed and darkness of an extreme nature. I think that Sarah Palin, for all of her small-town, small-state charm, in many ways is a consummate fascist manifestation, precisely because she represents herself and has been represented as a sort of a Ms. Everywoman or every person. In fact, Sarah Palin not only holds some extreme views, but at the same time as she's being sort of held up as an all-American icon, when one shifts the camera slightly to either side, one finds, particularly if you slide the camera to the right, what you find is forces that not only are profoundly un-American, but forces that intend to break up the United States, forces that are as un-American as it is possible to be. That's what we're going to be exploring in this broadcast. Now, one of the things that we're going to be doing, and again, I stress to listeners, use the description for this program when it comes up at spitfirelist.com, because that'll have links and, as is the case with so many descriptions, information that I don't have time to fit in the original broadcast. But Sarah Palin's husband, Todd, has been a member of the Alaskan Independence Party for a long time. He also has been described as a shadow governor. And the Alaskan Independence Party is not only a party that advocates Alaska's secession from the United States, but it is a fascist political party with evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the Iranian mullahs who backed Alaskan independence. It is an affiliate of the Constitution Party, which is a domestic fascist political party with associations with organizations like the Aryan Nations, organizations like the League of the South, a neo-Confederate organization. And to give an idea, to make a very long story very short, at the top of the masthead of the website of the Alaskan Independence Party, to which Sarah Palin's husband belonged for years, and to which Sarah Palin is very close, is a motto from none other than Jefferson Davis. Now, Jefferson Davis was also a past American president. For those people who might not be familiar with him, Jefferson Davis was president of the Confederate States of America during the Civil War. And at the top of the masthead of the Alaskan Independence Party is a quote from President Jefferson Davis, which I think in many ways serves to introduce us to the political forces embodied in Sarah Palin, who was not the vice president of the Confederate States of America, but who intended to be the vice president of what, at least for the time being, was the United States of America and what might very well have become, or what might become, the disunited States of America. Jefferson Davis said, "The principle for which we contend is bound to reassert itself, though it may be at another time and in another form," unquote. That, a quote from Confederate President Jefferson Davis at the top of the masthead of the website of the Alaskan Independence Party. The first of two good articles from Salon magazine about Sarah Palin, Todd Palin, and the AIP was printed on October 7th of 2008. This article is by David Talbot. It was headlined by Salon.com, "The Palins' Un-American Activities," and subtitled, "Imagine if the Obamas had hooked up with a violently anti-American group in league with the government of Iran." Now, note here not only the, again, violently anti-American sentiments of the party to which Sarah Palin's husband belonged and to which she remains quite close, but note also that this organization was getting support from the Iranian mullahs. And in the past, we've looked at the fascist connections of the Iranian Islamic fundamentalist government running from the Al-Taqwa milieu to François Genoux to elements that descended from the Third Reich and are part of what I call the Underground Reich to elements associated with the Holocaust denial movement, people like former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke and a German neo-Nazi lawyer and theoretician Jürgen Rieger, both of whom were networking with President Ahmadinejad of Iran at the December 2006 Holocaust denial conference that he held. So let's take a look at just what Sarah Palin has in her political cachet, so to speak. From Salon.com, David Talbot, The Palins on American Activities, October 7, 2008. It reads, "My government is my worst enemy, and I'm going to fight them with any means at hand," unquote. This was former revolutionary terrorist Bill Ayers back in his old Weather Underground days, right? Imagine what Sarah Palin is going to do with this incendiary quote as she tears into Barack Obama this week. Only one problem. The quote is from Joe Vogler, the raging anti-American who founded the Alaskan Independence Party. Inconveniently for Palin, that's the very same secessionist party that her husband Todd belonged to for 7 years and that she sent a shout-out to as Alaska governor earlier this year. "Keep up the good work," Palin told AIP members, "and God bless you," unquote. AIP chairwoman Lynette Clark told me recently that Sarah Palin is her kind of gal, quote, "She's Alaskan to the bone. She sounds just like Joe Vogler," unquote. So who are these America haters that the Palins are palling around with? Before his strange murder in 1993, party founder Vogler preached armed insurrection against the United States of America. Vogler, who always carried a magnum with him, was fond of saying, "When the federal bureaucrats come after me, I suggest they wear red coats. They make better targets that way." In the federal government are the biggest liars in the United States, and I hate them with a passion. They think they own Alaska. There comes a time when people will choose to die with honor rather than live with dishonor. That time may be coming here. Our goal is ultimate independence by peaceful means under a minimal government fully responsive to the people. I hope we don't have to take human life, but if they go tramping on our property rights, look out. We're ready to die. This quote is from Coming Into the Country by John McPhee, who traipsed around Alaska's remote gold mining country with Vogler for his 1991 book. The violent-tempered secessionist vowed to McPhee that if any federal official tried to stop him from polluting Alaska's rivers with his earth-moving equipment, he would, quote, "run over him with a cat and turn mosquitoes loose on him while he dies," unquote. Vogler wasn't just a blowhard either. He put his secessionist ideas into action, working to build AIP membership to 20,000, an impressive figure by Alaska standards, and to elect party member Walter Hickel as governor in 1990. Vogler's greatest moment of glory was to be his 1993 appearance before the United Nations to denounce United States, quote, tyranny, unquote, before the entire world, and to demand Alaska's freedom. The Alaska secessionist had persuaded the government of Iran to sponsor his anti-American harangue. That's right, Iran, the Islamic dictatorship, the taker of American hostages, the rogue nation that McCain and Palin have excoriated Obama for suggesting we diplomatically engage. Yes, that Iran. AIP leaders allege that Vogler, who was murdered that year by a fellow secessionist, was taken out by powerful forces in the U.S. before he could reach his U.N. platform. Quote, "The United States government would have been deeply embarrassed," unquote, by Vogler's U.N. speech, darkly suggests Clark. "And we can't have that, can we?" unquote. The Republican ticket is working hard this week to make Barack Obama's tenuous connection to graying 60s revolutionary Bill Ayers a major campaign issue. But the Palins' connection to anti-American extremism is much more central to their political biographies. Imagine the uproar if Michelle Obama was revealed to have joined a black nationalist party whose founder preached armed secession from the United States and who enlisted the government of Iran in his cause. The Obama campaign would probably not have survived such an explosive revelation, particularly if Barack Obama himself was videotaped giving the anti-American secessionist his wholehearted support just months ago. Where's the outrage, Sarah Palin has been asking this week, in her attacks on Obama's fuzzy ties to Ayers? The question is more appropriate when applied to her own disturbing associations. Well, yes, indeed, and we're going to explore the Alaskan Independence Party still further. Now, again, note that Sarah Palin's husband, Todd, is not only a member of that, but is described as a shadow governor in a number of jottings. And also Sarah Palin herself, as indicated in the article we just read, was giving a shout-out. She basically delivered her best wishes to the AIP just this year. And what we're going to take a look at now is more about the political agenda and activities of the AIP, how it in many ways appears to have co-opted Sarah Palin as something of a cat's paw within Alaskan mainstream Republican politics. And we're also in particular going to take a look at the agenda being pushed by the AIP, which intends to infiltrate and co-opt more mainstream conservative parties, particularly the Republican Party of Alaska. Now, bear in mind that an AIP member, former Nixon cabinet member Walter Hickel, became governor of Alaska running under the AIP. Eventually, he converted back to being a Republican. But Walter Hickel, basically, former AIP governor of Alaska, said of Sarah Palin, quote, basically, I made her governor. Bear in mind, too, as we're going to see later on in the broadcast, the AIP is the Alaskan contingent of a loose consortium of fascist political parties grouped around the Constitution Party, which also basically has evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of, among other institutions, the Aryan Nations, as well as the neo-Confederate secessionist League of the South. Another very good Salon.com article about Sarah Palin's AIP connections was authored by Max Blumenthal and David Nywert. This is from Sarah. This is from Salon.com from October 10th of 2008. This article is titled "Meet Sarah Palin's Radical Right Wing Pals." On the afternoon of September 24th in downtown Palmer, Alaska, as the sun began to sink behind the snow-capped mountains that flanked the picturesque Matsu Valley, 51-year-old Mark Chryson sat for an hour on a park bench reveling in tales of his days as chairman of the Alaskan Independence Party. The stocky, gray-haired computer technician waxed nostalgic about quixotic battles to eliminate taxes, support the traditional family, unquote, and secede from the United States. So long as Alaska remained under the boot of the federal government, said Chryson, the AIP had to stand on guard to stymie a new world order. He invited a Salon reporter to see a few items inside his pickup truck that were intended for his personal protection. This here's my attack dog, he said with a chuckle, handing the reporter an exuberant 8-pound papillon from his passenger seat. Her name is Susie, unquote. Then he pulled a 9mm Makarov PM pistol, once the standard-issue sidearm for Soviet cops, out of his glove compartment. Quote, I've got enough weaponry to raise a small army in my basement, he said, clutching the gun in his palm. Then again, so do most Alaskans, unquote. But Chryson added a message of reassurance to residents of that faraway place some Alaskans call the 48. We want to go our separate ways, he said, but we're not going to kill you, unquote. Though Chryson belongs to a fringe political party, one that advocates the secession of Alaska from the Union and that organizes with other like-minded secessionist movements from Canada to the Deep South, he is not without peculiar influence in state politics, especially in the rise of Sarah Palin. An obscure figure outside of Alaska, Chryson has been a political fixture in the hometown of the Republican vice presidential nominee for over a decade. During the 1990s, when Chryson directed the AIP, he and another radical right-winger, Steve Stoll, played a quiet but pivotal role in electing Palin as mayor of Wasilla and shaping her political agenda afterward. Both Stoll and Chryson not only contributed to Palin's campaign financially, they played major behind-the-scenes roles in the Palin camp before, during, and after her mayoral victory. Palin backed Chryson as he successfully advanced a host of anti-tax, pro-gun initiatives, including one that altered the state constitution's language to better facilitate the formation of anti-government militias. She joined in their vendetta against several local officials they disliked and listened to their advice about hiring. She attempted to name Stoll, a John Birch Society activist known in the Matsu Valley as Black Helicopter Steve, to an empty Wasilla City Council seat. Every time I showed up, her door was open, said Chryson, and that policy continued when she became governor. When Chryson first met Sarah Palin, however, he didn't really trust her politically. It was the early 1990s when he was a member of a local libertarian pressure group called SAGE, or Standing Against Government Excess. SAGE's founder, Tammy McGraw, was Palin's birth coach. Palin was a leader in a pro-sales tax citizens group called WOW, or Watch Over Wasilla, earning a political credential before her 1992 campaign for city council. Though he was impressed by her interpersonal skills, Kreisen greeted Palin's election warily, thinking she was too close to the Democrats on the council and too pro-tax. But soon, Palin and Kreisen discovered they could be useful to each other. Palin would be running for mayor while Kreisen was about to take over the chairmanship of the Alaskan Independence Party, which at its peak in 1990 had managed to elect a governor. The AIP was born of the vision of old Joe Vogler, a hard-bitten former gold miner who hated the government of the United States almost as much as he hated wolves and environmentalists. His resentment peaked during the early 1970s when the federal government began installing Alaska's oil and gas pipeline. Fueled by raw rage, quote, "The United States has made a colony of Alaska," unquote, he told author John McPhee in 1977, Vogler declared a maverick candidacy for the governorship in 1982. Though he lost, old Joe became a force to be reckoned with as well as a constant source of amusement for Alaska's political class. During a gubernatorial debate in 1982, Vogler proposed using nuclear weapons to obliterate the glaciers blocking roadways to Juneau. "There's gold under there," he exclaimed. Vogler made another failed run for the governor's mansion in 1986, but the AIP's fortunes shifted suddenly 4 years later when Vogler convinced Richard Nixon's former Interior Secretary, Wally Hickel, to run for governor under his party's banner. Hickel coasted to victory, outflanking a moderate Republican and a centrist Democrat. An arch-conservative Republican running under the AIP candidate, Jack Coghill, was elected lieutenant governor. Hickel's subsequent failure as governor to press for a vote on Alaskan independence rankled old Joe. With sponsorship from the Islamic Republic of Iran, Vogler was scheduled to present his case for Alaskan secession before the United Nations General Assembly in the late spring of 1993. But before he could, old Joe's long, strange political career ended tragically that May when he was murdered by a fellow secessionist. Hickel rejoined the Republican Party the year after Vogler's death and didn't run for re-election. Lieutenant Governor Coghill's campaign to succeed him as the AIP candidate for governor ended in disaster. He peeled away just enough votes from the Republican Jim Campbell to throw the gubernatorial election to Democrat Tony Knowles. Despite that disaster, Coghill hung on as AIP chairman for three more years. When he was asked to resign in 1997, Mark Kreisen replaced him. Kreisen pursued a dual policy of cozying up to secessionist and right-wing groups in Alaska and elsewhere, while also attempting to replicate the AIP's success with Hickel in infiltrating the mainstream. Unlike some radical right-wingers, Kreisen doesn't put forward his ideas freighted with anger or paranoia. And in a state where defense of gun and property rights often takes on a real religious fervor, Kreisen was able to present himself as a typical Alaskan. He rose through party ranks by reducing the AIP's platform to a single page that, quote, 90% of Alaskans could agree with, unquote. This meant scrubbing the old platform of what Kreisen called racist language, unquote, while accommodating the state's growing Christian right movement by emphasizing the AIP's commitments to the traditional family, unquote. "The AIP is very family-oriented," Kreisen explained. "We're for the traditional family, daddy, mommy, kids, because we all know that it was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and we don't care if Heather has two mommies. That's not a traditional family," unquote. Kreisen further streamlined the AIP's platform by softening its secessionist language. Instead of calling for immediate separation from the United States, the platform now demands a vote on independence. Yet Kreisen maintains that his party remains committed to full independence. Quote, "The Alaskan Independence Party has got links to almost every independence-minded movement in the world," Kreisen exclaimed, parenthetically including the UNPO, Lakota and Hawaiian independence, the League of the South, Vermont secessionists, the Chechens, the Hawaiians, or as I mentioned that, the Tibetans, the Inner Mongolians, the Uyghurs. Surprise, surprise. Continuing, "And Alaska is not the only place that's about separation. There's at least 30 different states that are talking about some type of separation from the United States." This has meant rubbing shoulders and forging alliances with outright white supremacists and far-right theocrats, particularly those who dominate the proceedings at such gatherings as the North American Secessionist Conventions, which AIP delegates have attended in recent years. The AIP's affiliation with neo-Confederate organizations is motivated as much by ideological affinity as by organizational convenience. Indeed, Chrisen makes no secret of his sympathy for the lost cause. Quote, "Should the Confederate states have been allowed to separate and go their peaceful ways," unquote, Crichton asked rhetorically. Yes. The War of Northern Aggression, or the Civil War, or the War between the States, however you want to refer to it, was not about slavery. It was about states' rights, unquote. Another far-right organization with whom the AIP has been long aligned is Howard Phillips' militia-minded Constitution Party. The AIP has been listed as the Constitution Party's state affiliate since the late 1990s, and it has endorsed the Constitution Party's presidential candidates Michael Perutka and Chuck Baldwin in the past two elections. The Constitution Party boasts an openly theocratic platform that reads, quote, "It is our goal to limit the federal government to its delegated, enumerated, constitutional functions and to restore American jurisprudence to its original biblical common law foundations," unquote. In its 1990s incarnation as the U.S. Taxpayers' Party, it was on the front lines in promoting the militia movement, and a significant portion of its membership comprises former and current militia members. At its 1992 convention, the AIP hosted both Phillips, the USTP's presidential candidate, and militia movement leader Colonel James Beau Greitz, who was campaigning for president under the banner of the far-right Populist Party. According to Chrisen, AIP regulars heavily supported Greitz, but the party deferred to Phillips' presence and issued no official endorsements. By the way, the Populist Party was the creature of the Nazi Liberty Lobby. Continuing, in Wasilla, the AIP became powerful by proxy because of Chrisen and Stoll's alliance with Sarah Palin. Chrisen and Stoll had found themselves in constant opposition to policies of Wasilla's Democratic mayor, who started his three-term, nine-year tenure in 1987. By 1992, Chrisen and Stoll had been convening regular protests outside city council. Their demonstrations invariably involved grievances against any and all forms of socialist government, unquote, from city planning to public education. Stoll shared Chrisen's conspiratorial views, quote, "The rumor was that he had wrapped his guns in plastic and buried them in his yard so he could get them after the New World Order took over," unquote, Stein told a reporter. Chrisen did not trust Palin when she joined the city council in 1992. He claimed that she was handpicked by the Democratic city council leaders and by Wasilla's Democratic mayor, John Stein, to rubber stamp their tax hike proposals. "When I first met her," he said, "I thought she was extremely left, but I've watched her slowly as she's become more pronounced in her conservative ideology." We're going to continue with this article in Side 2. We're going to indeed see just how profoundly the Alaskan Independence Party and Steve Stoll and Mr. Chrisen, Mark Chrisen, we're going to see the influence they wielded over Sarah Palin. Again, somebody who is to a large extent a more or less overt, somewhat between the lines, but to a certain extent an overt exponent of an overt secessionist party. Well, she was running for vice president on the Republican ticket, and it's going to be interesting to see how the presence of elements like this in the political opposition will manifest themselves with the first African-American president of the United States. However, we're going to go into that inside two of this broadcast. Spitfirelist.com, that's the website, much newer, more professional, more user-friendly website. New site, same fight. Use the website, please, and the myriad of information that's on it. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 652, Palin by Comparison. This program has been recorded on November 8th of the year 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.